out of the sack, feet on the street, buns on the run. You are listening to part two of my older brother's epic mistake to have me, his younger brother, host the show this evening. What an honor and happy birthday, Sam. I figured I'd play a nice intro there from Tron for you, give you a little bit of fanfare. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome tonight. It is a pleasure to be with you. I am your host, Matthew Von Trapp. And tonight we've got a special treat. I would like to think all of them are special. We've got a special treat tonight. Because, you know, we talked a lot yesterday about some of the recent events of, you know, these rallies and things like that, the No Kings rallies. And I've had some really great conversations on Facebook about this. And so, you know, there's a lot of good stuff that we can talk about here. So one of the things that I want to do before we get into it is, and tonight's episode, by the way, is basically about the media, Hollywood, and how they are power facilitators. And at the epicenter of everything that is going on is a very simple and powerful reality that we all need to look at together. And so I hope you'll go on that journey with me tonight. It's a beautiful Tuesday night here. And I want to go through that journey and take a look at this and see where we can come to some answers together. But first, let's go through a quick overview, because if you haven't listened to the other episodes, please reach out, look through either Podbean or Damn Radio or any of the other areas where you can stream these. We definitely want you to know some of the background, because all these episodes build upon each other. So episode one, The American World Order, this is where we set the stage. We're talking about the U.S. built the post-World War II order. That order has been in effect for, a long time. It's been nearly 100 years coming up. We explore the Ray Dalio framework of rising and declining empires and why that's important to look at, to kind of know where you are. And we laid the foundational language of, you know, what's really happening around us. Episode two was the rise of the American empire and what many consider to be a globalist coup, right? And in that one, we talk a lot about the Bush family, which if anybody who knows me knows that I do not appreciate the Bush family. That's a kind way of putting it. And that has very little to do with politics and everything to do with who they are, what they believe, and how they do it. Episode three, where we talked about conspiracies. We talked about things that were taught to us as conspiracy theories. And that's going to be an important term tonight, because the way that things are framed depends on whether or not we will listen. And why is it that certain factions in our government don't want us to look under certain rocks? And so they'll label it as a conspiracy theory. What we did in that episode is we brought out like 13 or 14 real live conspiracies and put them before you. And we, by the way, we were mild there. We weren't trying to be political. We were just showing you some of the things that happened. You can definitely look at the political ones. That's episode three. Episode four, we went beyond left and right. We talked about how this isn't a battle between left and right, but a battle between the United States and a globalist takeover. And that was important. We talked about globalism. Episode five, we talked about 9/11 as a flashpoint, as a pivotal turning point, not just a tragedy. We talked about how the 9/11 incident was used to launch endless wars and normalize things like surveillance, et cetera, et cetera. And we began to see how certain groups, both domestically and abroad, began connecting these crisis levers for transformation. Oh, you know, here's a good excuse for this. Episode six, we talked about multi-generational influence. We talked about how the elite, and who's an elite, by the way? I think it's worth pointing this out. They can do what we can't. They have the money, the power, the influence to do things that the average person can't do. That makes them elite, right? I'm not trying to say, oh, there's this like elitist group that, you know, no, just look at what you can't do, right? And by the way, we all know it's on a scale. Like there's people starving in the def you know, the deserts of Africa that obviously can't drive a car. To them, you're elite, right? Generally speaking, the elitists are those people that have a much more power, influence, and money than you will ever dream of. Goes beyond a vote, right? So then we talked about in episode seven, global power structures. We talked about, you know, some of the groups. We specifically highlighted the Bilderberg Group. We discussed how they function, where the money comes from, these kinds of things. We also talked about whether, you know, we asked the question of whether we have the illusion of democracy or whether it's real. And finally, last night, we talked about some of the recent activities in America, otherwise known as these rallies, these No King rallies. And we talked about whether or not people were actually aware of who was a king and who wasn't in America. And essentially, what we presented there was that a lot of the things that presidents do and have done historically over the last 40 years are things that the American people didn't vote on. Joe Biden, for example, you know, he opened up the doors to immigration. Does anybody anywhere know why? Did he explain it? Did anybody explain it? By the way, Biden wasn't running the government. We know that. So did the people who do that, did they explain why? Right? So those were some of the things that we talked about. And we ended the episode last night where I invited every one of us to be kinder, nicer, take care of our neighbors and ourselves, and really begin to move beyond all of the rhetoric and the hate and the struggles and love your neighbor for crying out loud. But after the show last night, I was preparing for the show tonight, which I had already laid out the topic. I realized, you know, it's that quote from Marcus Aurelius that says, whatever blocks the way becomes the way. My friends, you can't really move on and do the things that you need to do to truly have peace with your neighbor if you don't know the truth. Right? So, what is truth? Right? Truth is the knowledge of things as they really are. Not as we feel they are, as they really are. Now, today, truth is under attack in every area of life. Right? It used to be back in the day that people would, you know, argue about religion. And by the way, alert to anybody who's triggered by religion. We are going to be talking about some of these religious topics tonight because I'm going to be running comparisons between what used to be, you know, it used to be people would talk about religion. They would say, how do you know there's a God? Well, I believe there's a God. Well, how do you know, right? And these arguments would go back and forth. Now we're seeing those same type of arguments about science. Health. And for anybody who's ever been on a diet, you're like, what am I doing? You know, they have these crazy diets out there. Society, right? Social norms, gender identity, etc. And of course, politics. So we're going to get into this a little bit, and we're going to talk about what all this means to us and where to go. So you know, when we look at this, we have to understand that this isn't just political. As I said, this is a war on truth. Whether you are on the left or the right, you believe the other side is deceived. Am I right? Can I get an amen? You believe the other side is deceived, don't you? Come on, admit it. The other side is, insert adjective here. Remember to be kind. So for most of human history, all the way up through the foundation of this country, belief in God was a given. And starting in the 70s and 80s, that really became up for debate and began to be mocked in the mainstream circles. Religious belief is framed as outdated or anti-science. Now, this becomes problematic when science itself is also debated. So this, you know, this is where I'm going with this. Popular media portrays religious people as ignorant, judgmental, or dangerous. Why is that important? Think about the other political party that you don't like. You think of them as ignorant. You think of them as judgmental. And you think of them as dangerous, don't you? So the key thing to know, though, about the religious debate is that by having that question and by unseating God, so to speak, I'm just going to use that as a generic term, a small g. By unseating God, moral authority now shifted from God to the state, right? From scripture or doctrine or whatever to self-expression, right? So, and people called that progress. Great. It's progress. I'm not going to argue with you. But I am just telling you how things went. Right? Because what we're seeing is a transition of what people believe to be true. And that's all I'm pointing out here. I'm not expecting you to go out and join a religion or do anything like that. What I'm saying is that religion used to be the thing in my lifetime that was debated. Everything else, science, right? Health, society, politics even, was considered established. So let's move on. What happened to science? So science used to mean it was measurable, observable, testable truth. Now it's fractured into competing realities. I can remember when the Democrat Party used to say, follow the science, follow the science. And they did this during the gay marriage debates. Follow the science. Or they would say it during abortion debate. Now, not so much, because now they're trying to defend things like pedophilia and some of these other like trans movements, etc. By the way, no judgment from me. I'm just saying what's happening. But what are some other views? Let's move away from that, because that's actually in the social realm. But what about these competing views? Do you remember back 10 years ago, we had the round earth versus the flat earth? Do you remember that? And we had some legit like people out there doing quote unquote science experiments to show that the earth was flat. During that time, I was very fascinated by what is true and what is not true. I actually went out and bought one of the old encyclopedia. I think it's an Encyclopedia Britannica or Americana or whatever, one of those old ones. And I looked up, and it does say, right? And by the way, I'm not trying to start a debate here, but it does say that there is a dome on the South Pole at 13,000 feet, right? What does that mean that there's a dome? Who knows? I didn't write it. It doesn't explain it. But this debate went around and around. Sorry to use the pun. What about multiverse and simulation theory? Elon Musk loves simulation theory. Simulation theory basically says we're all in a software simulation. You've got hollow Earth, which means the Earth is hollow. There's actually a sun inside the Earth, and there's, you know, little people that come out of holes in the ground, right? So these are competing views. Most of them aren't given much traction nowadays, but for a while there, so we've got like Neil deGrasse Tyson. They push one narrative while silencing others. A few years ago, there was a debate between Bill Nye, the science guy, and Ken Ham, the religious guy. And the big takeaway out of that debate was that they're using the same evidence, but they have a different story to tell about that evidence. Same evidence, different story. So can we trust the science? Now, anymore, when people say trust the science, remember, they're not saying that as an invitation to inquiry, but as a command to submit. So real questions get dismissed as a conspiracy, right? And this goes back to the labels during the Bush administration, where we can't tolerate conspiracy theories, you know, when we're trying to get those terrorizers, right? So, sorry, I do a bad impression of Bush, but seriously, remember, trust the science right now. Trust the science. It's a command given to you. You aren't allowed to bring stuff. And that's what the whole scientific process is about, to bring questions, to find answers. But guess what we've turned that into? No, you have to submit to my way of thinking. So the moment science became unquestionable, it stopped being science and started being a religion. I'm just going to throw that out there. If you have to believe in it without checking it out, it's no longer science. So you can say to everybody, oh, I don't believe in religion. Trust the science. Did you catch that? Did you catch what you're trying to do? You're trying to get us to believe you and whatever nonsense you're peddling. I don't care if it's flat earth, round earth, whatever. Right? So what's one of the other ones? Healthy. This has been big since RFK got into the health and human services. So during COVID, health became a battlefield, not just in hospitals, but when we look at the hearts and minds of people, I can remember being blocked by a friend of mine that had been friends for 20 years. It was just kind of casual. We hardly ever spoke to each other, right? But I remember there was a family member, I think it was her brother. Now, she was a nurse, and her brother went on and talked about the effectiveness of masks, and he posted some data. And I think all I did was say something along the lines of, that's interesting, or, you know, we should definitely look into this or whatever. Blocked. No room for debate. Now, have any of those people ever come back and apologize to the rest of us for the complete nonsense that was COVID? No. Right? But we saw these conflicting narratives on vaccines. Were they safe or were they risky? Do you remember the Israelis gave 4 and 5 vaccine doses to a single person? And they said there is no difference between the person who got 5 vaccines and the one who got 1 vaccine. But yet people kept pushing more and more vaccines. What about the diets? What about vegan versus carnivore versus keto? Right? Big conflict. What about mental health? Pharmaceuticals versus faith-based healing? Or pharmaceuticals versus some of the natural homeopathic remedies? Does it bother anybody that big pharma has influence over what gets labeled healthy or what gets labeled dangerous? By the way, that was one of RFK's big sticking points in what he was trying to fix at Health and Human Services. It'd be interesting to find out where he's gone on that. So doctors became censored, early treatments ridiculed, death data was manipulated during COVID. We know that for a fact. People who had like heart disease or were dying of cancer who got COVID, right, who were like at stage four and were about to die 3 days later, got COVID, and it was labeled a COVID death, right? And hospitals were getting paid $36,000 each for to label somebody COVID death. But let's take a look at what the CDC did. They were acting as political bodies, not as neutral advisors. The CDC, the World Health Organization, we now started receiving orders from them. And by the way, they didn't ask what would make you well. They told you what would make them rich. And that's one of the things this had just started out. We were into COVID for about 2 weeks. I was working at a software company and a friend of mine goes, hey, you know, what can we expect here on some of these things, you know? And I said, if this is anything like war zones, the first thing we'll see is people making money off of it. And that, in my assessment, is what we saw. A lot of people making a lot of money. All right. So when we talk about, you know, this transition of, you know, going from religious, you know, debate to scientific debate to health debate, it's no wonder that it's easy to now debate identity, like gender identity and all these other things. So we've moved from you are responsible for your actions as they relate to reality, to the truth, to you are defined by your feelings. I feel like I am an older black woman, and that I need to, you know, get my Social Security disability right now and some type of pension. Can you imagine if I said that to somebody? Like, they literally think you're crazy, right? But we have that in society. We have people that are marrying pillows. See the guy in Japan that married a pillow? What about this? Now, the left says you're born gay, you're born trans, or you're born non-binary, and it is immutable. But behavior like theft, addiction, or violence is still considered changeable. Does that make sense? Can't I just say I was born a criminal and I love to rob banks? And ever since I was a kid, I was stealing out of piggy banks and I robbed stuff out of the Easter baskets and I would steal presents under the tree. Isn't that proof? Why are you trying to stick me in jail? You're being oppressive. So if you challenge identity narratives, you're labeled as hateful and unsafe. Sound familiar? Sound familiar? So behavior becomes identity and thus immune to criticism. Victimhood, by the way, now becomes a path to power. So if we're just born this way, then there's no such thing as breaking a law or committing a sin if you're a Christian. If there's no law, let me put it this way, if there's no punishment, then there's no law. Like, if we're not going to punish the people, then there's no law. And we see that in Chicago. In Illinois, they changed the law. So you can go out and murder someone, and they'll say, okay, show up for your hearing in a couple of weeks. There's no bond, nothing. Why? Because to post bail was considered oppressive to the poor. Rather than raise the standard and say, everybody who's accused of murder, they spend all the time in jail, regardless. There's no bail for anybody. Rather than that, they went the other direction. So again, if you say, now I'm going to bring Christianity back into this because I want to show how even Christianity is diluted. So if there is no sin, then there is no need for the Savior. in your religion, is there? Which is why your religion is most of the time ignored, because you're out there saying there's no wrong and right here. Just saying. So that's society. What about politics? Okay, now here we are. Okay, now we're getting to the meat of it. So now, you know, it's very apparent that this is a battle for truth more than anything. And nowhere is the battle for truth more obvious or more absurd than in politics. So I want to point a couple of things out. 2020 election. What is the right claim? What are all the Republicans and those folks that supported Trump? What are they saying in 2020? They're saying Biden stole the election. It is interesting. He has, I don't know, what did they say? 15 to 20 more, 20 million more votes than, if you look back over the last elections, over the last 50, 60 years, there's this spike of people that voted, which hasn't been there before or since. So did Biden steal it with ballots? Algorithms, little thumb drives that went into voting machines? Did he? If you're on the right, you're going to say, yeah, that dirtbag stole it. What if you're on the left? You're going to say, Trump tried to steal the election. He had an armed insurrection. He tried to take over the country. You catch it? You're both saying the same thing. You're both accusing the other side of stealing the election or trying to steal it. One was successful, one wasn't. Regardless of which side you're on. Do you know have you ever seen an argument where someone starts copying the other person? Hey, you stole my pencil. No, you stole my pencil. Well, no, this pencil, I've had it for a long time. Well, I had it before you had it. Have you ever seen those? Those are the ones that become the most confusing. So January 6th was described as either a terrorist attack or a protest gone too far, and there were some injustices and people were arrested who had nothing to do with it. There was one guy who all he did was touch a sign that went over his head, and he got jail time, like 3 years in jail, if I remember right. But what about the No Kings rallies we talked about yesterday? Right? We got these accusers accusing Trump of trying to rule like a monarch. And what did I point out last night? That they have no problem with the unelected bureaucrats who silenced citizens under Biden, right? These are the guys who sent emails over to Zuckerberg and over to the Twitter folks. Hey, shut down the accounts of Joe Blow so that he can't have his First Amendment rights. Did you march? Do you care? No. Why? Because you believe a narrative. And what about those who were upset during those times? So whichever side controls the microphone seems to control the truth. Thank heavens that's me tonight. Because I'm going to point out the hypocrisy of both sides. But one of the things we see is that media is selectively reporting or ignoring, depending on who it helps. This is the other thing we see, right? And because we don't have disagreements about policy anymore. Like I bring up a policy, healthcare should be provided for all. No, I don't think so. That's not even what happens. Instead, we have two countries living in two different realities, built on two different sets of lies. What are you going to do about it? Because you're in one of them, most likely. Until you extract yourself and rise above it, you are a pawn. Living a delusion, a happy delusion, where you think the other side is woefully deluded themselves. Oh, wow. So Let's move on because I want to show some other things here tonight. And I'm gonna end up bumping up against the clock if I'm not careful. So let's take a look at we already showed here in this first section that there's this war on truth. And a couple of key things I should mention about that is that new terms came out of misinformation and disinformation. And again, as soon as those terms came out, they started flying against each other with equal vigor. So now, if it's true that the other side has some kind of lie they're believing in, well, who is making that lie available to everybody? Is it not the media? Like, regardless of which side you believe in, you're going to have to definitely accept the fact that the news media is a part of it. Now, if you are one of those people slurping up all the good stuff off of CNN, you are pointing your finger over at Fox News. Look at those guys. Do you see the lies and disinformation? Meanwhile, over in Fox News land, these guys are pointing over there. Look at those guys. You see what they're doing on CNN? Did you see the lies and just the outright nonsense? Does any of that sound familiar to you? It should. So remember, we talked a little bit about this yesterday. Headlines are now there to evoke emotion, not information. You don't need information. You need righteous indignation so we can get something done, so we can take care of these liars and dirtbags. If you ever hear the breaking news thing, it's a tactic to keep you reactive, tribal, and afraid. Like Pavlov's dogs, a little bell rings and you jump up with your pitchfork, ready to go skewer a Republican or a Democrat. Right? It used to be that back in the day, people, both sides were against the communists. But now, nobody even knows what communist is. And oh, by the way, half of our kids already believe in communism or socialism as a good way forward anyway. Who taught them that? So there we have a little bit of education in the mix too, don't we? So legacy media, they no longer investigate, right? They basically reinforce predetermined narratives. So they go out and they gather evidence for a predetermined narrative. So what are the tools they do? Remember, some of these we said last night, but it in this context, it bears repeating. Speaking of repeating, one of the big ones is repetition. Why? Because they're trying to get you to hear it again and again and again. They want you to know it. They want you to memorize it. What about censorship? Hey, we are going to take out, we now know this as a fact, by the way, that the censorship of the Biden laptop was real. We know that it was absolutely real. We know that it was a false narrative. If you were on the left and you still believe that the Biden laptop thing was a hoax, remember, he was already tried and convicted. If it wasn't for Daddy or whoever it was controlling that pen, he'd probably be in jail right now. Okay, he didn't have the luck that Trump did of getting voted into an office. Okay. So you got repetition, you got censorship, and you've got emotional language. And then you've got false balance. What is false balance? Experts say that 38% of all Republicans are idiots. Conspiracy theorists claim that it was Donald Trump who did this. Experts, they're referring to these other people. So in the end, you're not watching the news, you're watching emotional programming with a political sponsor. Let me just say that again. You are not watching the news. You are watching emotional programming with a political sponsor. Who's sponsoring your emotions today? Is it CNN? Is it Fox? Something else. One of the reasons why I like some of these, and we'll get into this at the end of things you can do, but it's one of the reasons why I like these news platforms like Ground News or Fan News, SAN, because they will show the bias. They'll say, here's all the left-leaning newspapers and the right-leaning newspapers. Here's all the left media and these other ones. And then they'll list the how the article gets portrayed on any news item. The fact that the one fact that's not being disputed is that CNN is on the left and Fox News is on the right, supposedly. That's the one thing people aren't disputing, and no one's upset about that. Like, you aren't upset that your media is controlled that way? Shouldn't you be out in the streets with your No King signs and have CNN and Fox News at the top of that? Just saying. Let's talk about Hollywood for a minute. What is Hollywood doing? Well, they push anti-family themes. I can remember back 10, 15 years ago when every show either made fun of men or had women as single mothers, as this is like the preferred thing. And the guy was just absent from the show. Anti-family, anti-men, anti-white men. They showed him as all bumbling idiots. Right? What else? Hypersexuality in Hollywood. Everything is sexualized. Right? And also the glorification of rebellion against tradition. Wow, we want to get rid of these traditions. Let's get rid of it. I think one of the things that sticks out to me about Hollywood, and you guys probably have your own, is this dystopian future that's always portrayed. We've got zombie movies again and again and again, and we've got Earth being destroyed. And I mean, tell me of any shows that really show a bright future. Of an amazing future that I believe is more likely than anything. So we are conditioned to expect the collapse, not prevent it. Like, who's going to rise up and fight World War III as if it were, like, nobody today would get up and fight World War II because you would already believe that you're not going to win. So there's a movie called Don't Look Up. Do you remember that one? The Handmaid's Tale, The Hunger Games, Children of Men. These films subtly or overtly push globalist, anti-sovereignty, collectivist messaging of a dystopic future in most cases. If they can get you to expect hopelessness, you won't fight for a better world. If they can get you to laugh evil things, then you'll never change from that. And for you Christians out there, listen to what I'm saying. If you are there laughing and enjoying the sin you see on TV, you're teaching your mind that it's okay, right? Because it's not evil. So think about that, because And this is relevant whether you're a Christian or not, that whatever you believe in, if you start to accept the opposite of that, your belief will go away. So together, these two elements of the media and Hollywood, you know, these social norms that are being pushed together, they form a symbiotic system. So media and Hollywood don't just reflect the culture. They construct it. And they don't just construct it. They enforce it and reinforce it. One of the things that this reminded me of, I spent time in a psychological warfare unit. It sounded like I was going to say psychological unit, right? Of a hospital. Psychological warfare, 24 PSYOPs, in Denver, Colorado. I was there for a little bit. And what's funny is they would brag. They would say, you know what? We went down to Panama and we got those people to believe in what we were doing. So we came in, took their president, and they cheered us on. So is this psychological warfare and the battlefield is your mind? So if that's the case, then the perpetrators of this, they don't want you confused. They want you dependent on them. Think about who you're dependent on because you don't know the truth and can't see it. Guess what you do? You rely on oligarchs to post an ad in a paper to tell you when to rally or if you should rally, to tell you what's important, to tell you what the truth is. Like 10 years ago, not a single one of you that marched would have ever, in your wildest imagination, been marching against Barack Obama for enforcing border controls? I mean, there's a lot of hypocrisy there. If you wouldn't have done it under Obama, why are you doing it now? Has nothing to do with Trump, right? And I'm going to say that out loud. You've been brainwashed. Not just you over there on the left, you on the right. Okay, enough of my, strong language there. But it is psychological warfare. You're going to have to think about that. So how did we get here? Well, it all started with the rise of subjective morality, where my morality is not your morality. Well, this isn't wrong for me, so it's okay. So this is where truth is no longer something we all agree on, but something everyone defines for themselves. I believe I'm a cat, so I should receive, some type of cat pension somewhere. So this cultural shift from objective to subjective morality is important because it enables us to be little sponges for whatever falsehoods that come our way. Now, for much of human history, and certainly throughout the founding of America, truth and morality were understood to be objective. This goes back to the early part of, when we talked about the rise of the American world order. If you were sitting around somewhere in 1954, truth and morality were absolute. They were objective. To shoot someone was wrong. Not just wrong because it was in the law, but it was morally wrong. You didn't find people cheering about the death of a CEO by some kid who didn't like the prices of insurance. And for those of you that cheered his death, think about it. Think about your morality. Where did you get that? Right? Remember, back in those days, truth was something discovered, not invented. But in the 60s and 70s, this all started changing, right? This was fueled by postmodern philosophy, the Cultural Revolution, the Sexual Revolution. And I'm sorry to say this once again, the political left, especially the Democratic Party and its intellectual allies, began rejecting objective standards, not only rejecting them, but teaching them in school. They all went into education. Morality became personal. Truth became relative. Authority was no longer sacred. It was oppressive. This shift didn't just stay in the universities. It spread through public education, pop culture, journalism, and eventually government institutions, because it is just people running those. So again, it was no longer about what was right, but what was authentic. Be your authentic self. Be true to yourself. And who are you? You want to pretend that you're a ballerina? Go be a ballerina. What is your truth? That's what they would ask. What is your truth? So let's talk about the fruits of that shift for just a moment. We now live in a world where a man can say he's a woman, and you are the bigot if you disagree. By the way, we had to go to the Supreme Court, and so did the folks in the UK, just to say that a man is not a woman. Again, where's the science? We've got science deniers. By the way, violence is now called a mostly peaceful protest if it's not on the right side of the narrative. Well, it was mostly peaceful, except for those 38 people that were killed and run over. And we also hear that silence can be violence, but actual violence can be justice. We also have microaggressions that popped up. And worst of all, truth is no longer expected to match reality. It's expected to match feelings. Think about that. Your truth is yours and it needs to match your feelings. And if somebody else doesn't get that, well, shame on them. So, and if it doesn't match, well, the truth gets censored, it gets canceled or condemned. Cancel culture, sound familiar? Why does this matter? So, when truth is relative, power fills the void. Whoever controls the narrative now controls the people. All of those 1800 marches, from my perspective, look like a bunch of people following the Pied Piper. Literally, an oligarch places an ad, and you go out there with your signs, laughing and cheering. Where were you earlier? For all the other tyrants. Now the feelings become the law. Remember what the people were protesting against. They're not protesting against actual tyranny. They're protesting against the fact that the laws that Barack Obama enforced cannot be enforced under Donald Trump because now he's evil. So this is not just a social trend, it's what we would normally call a spiritual war, a war between ideologies, beliefs. I've said it in multiple episodes that the only thing you really get to choose in life is your belief. Everything else follows. For you Christians out there, remember that the reason why Christ was killed is because there was a different narrative out there that he wasn't who he said he was. So what was said to be the Antichrist isn't just about denying who Christ is, it's about denying truth itself. So you yourself as a Christian have an obligation. And for those of you that aren't Christian, you have an obligation to your fellow man, especially if you're a humanist. If you're Muslim, if you're Jewish, you have an obligation to find and follow the truth. And I'm not talking about you need to change religions. I'm saying you need to be able to at least have an objective truth, not a subjective truth. So if we know how we got here, what do we do now? How do we find this truth in a world full of noise, propaganda, and psychological manipulation? So that's what we're going to talk about next, because it's really important that we go through some of these things. Before we do, though, I want to give a real-world example of somebody not being truthful in the government. Now, do you remember last night when I talked about different organizations and of these different organizations, some of them are, have more influence than others? Do you remember I talked about the Brookings Institute? Wow, one of my favorite papers to talk about came from the Brookings Institute. And it's called Which Path to Persian. It's like 170 or 174 pages or something like that. it's a big, you know, it's a big book to read here if you're just looking for a policy paper. So the Brookings Institute comes up with this policy paper. And remember, the original draft of this was written the day after 9/11. It was a single page that was passed around the Pentagon. And on that single page, it basically said we need to eliminate these 13 countries. Not the country. We need to eliminate their government, their way of thinking, their way of being, who they are. Right? Witch Path to Persia was done in 2009. So it was up to Obama to really implement it. Why is this important? Let me go through. So I'll just give you a quick summary of this persuasion strategy of Witch Path to Persia. And this is about how to take care of Iran. Remember, the globalists see the world in terms of who is in and who's out. So if you think of it like a human body, we may have China and Russia as an arm and a forearm, and Iran and Syria, Lebanon, all these as fingers. But we need everybody in this global framework. So that's how they look at it, right? So how do we get everybody to be nice, or let's say it's more like a Star Trek. You want everybody to be on the same page. The whole world is at peace, which also, you know, Star Trek was one of those positive influencers of, oh, the world could be so great if we didn't have any countries anymore, right? Anyway, Brookings Institution outlines a strategy where diplomacy isn't solely aimed at resolution, but also creating a moral and political pretext for escalation. This means, what does that mean? It means they wanted war, regime change, or sanctions if Iran refused U.S. defined terms. Now, what was the strategy? The core strategy in Witch Path to Persia is that they were going to create the appearance, this is what they promoted, create the appearance of a sincere, generous diplomatic offer. And hey, look, we're going to give you all this stuff, and this is everything you can do. Make it very generous, but ensure the terms are just strict enough that Iran is unlikely to agree. When Iran declines, or let's say they agree, we made it so that it was really hard to comply. They're going to use this rejection to justify escalation. Now, remember, this is a policy paper that got sent over to Barack Obama. Now, the last tenet of this core strategy was to carefully manage global perception so that the US is seen as acting in good faith. Let me tell you a story. In 2001, I was deployed to Kosovo, Macedonia. For what was told to everybody on the news, it said, there's a civil war in Macedonia and we need to send troops over there. So I go over there. Guess what I find on the ground? And by the way, there's an international peacekeeping force. It's KFOR. Guess what I find? There's a guy and his buddies that have stolen artillery pieces, and they were running around holding cities hostage, saying, if you don't give us money, we're going to fire these weapons into your city. And so the local cities would pay up. Now, who doesn't believe that we couldn't go over there within 5 minutes of the special forces team and take out this guy and his 27 buddies? No, that's not what happened. Instead, we had an entire multinational force out there doing all kinds of other stuff with that as pretext. So, do you remember the lies that Bush told to get us to go over to Iraq and kill 200,000 people? Do you remember those lies? Yeah, very similar. So, what's this fourth part of the strategy? It's to carefully manage global perception so that the US is seen as acting in good faith. What? They want to tell a lie, a global lie. Are you okay with that? By the way, Obama adopted it. He did it. Is he a king? So, what'd they do? They set measurable deadlines and goals. They said that there had to be all of these things in there that, hey, you got to do this by this date, sort of thing. There were automatic penalties, including sanctions. They used carrots and sticks. They were offering these benefits and consequences, right? They made it very apparent that the offer had to be, quote unquote, too good. They wanted to appear fair. Remember this. They wanted to appear fair. So they had to make the deal look generous so that the world blames Iran for refusing or breaking it. So do you remember when Trump came into office and he's like, yeah, Iran's, really messed everything up? Well, who set the stage for that? Barack Obama. I don't know. This is so crazy. I definitely download this. Go to the Brookings Institute, download Which Path to Persia. Read it yourself. Don't trust me. Do your own research. Don't be lazy. Do your own research. So they had to make the deal look generous, so the world blamed Iran. And remember, the point wasn't resolution. It was optical justification for future force. In other words, when we go in there and blow the crap out of Iran, as is happening now, today, as we speak, remember, they didn't want to resolve anything. They wanted a policy in the United States that didn't resolve anything, but set up Iran for future time when we could take them out and it would be believable. That was Barack Hussein Obama and Biden. And who knows what Trump's doing now? He may unwittingly be the guy just carrying the rest of it out, or he may be in on it. Who knows? So they had to do so. If Iran accepted it, they were going to do tight, very tight monitoring and verification. There was enrichment. There were strict inspected. I'm sorry, enrichment of uranium should come with strict inspections. There were limits, third party controls. How do you think where? I mean, how do you think the Israelis know where everything is? Right? The inspectors. Diplomacy was seen as a tactical maneuver, like somebody holding up a white flag during the Civil War, walking over to the enemy camp, saying, hey, listen, we got wounded guys over there. Let's take a break. But the whole time, all he's really doing is scoping out where all the big guns are. And right when he gets back, they start launching. Right? What else did they do? So, as part of the narrative, as part of this whole facade, they wanted public, quote unquote, transparency. They wanted to make the final offer public, which Barack Obama did, so that rejection damages Iran's credibility. And they wanted to avoid, now this is in the document, but avoid demeaning language like carrot and stick that would reveal the manipulation. So, hey, we're going to keep that out of the public. Any kings here, people? Now, they had to get international buy-in. That was the seventh tenet of this. So success required cooperation of Russia, China, and Europe. They needed those three. And this may require the US to do what? Make unrelated concessions in other regions or negotiations. Do you ever wonder why China got some extra trade deals? Do you ever wonder why we had to back off on certain things? Because we were like, look, you support this, and we're willing to overlook this little fentanyl crisis in America that killed 300,000 people in a single year. Right? By the way, after I said that, I realized, was it a single year or was it over the course of Biden's? I can't remember. But anyway, the eighth part of this was that they had to control the narrative. In other words, use media coverage to frame Iran as unreasonable and hostile. How do you use media coverage if you don't have control over the coverage, over the media, I mean? right? Did anybody catch that? And the US always has to be portrayed as the rational actor. Now, what else did they suggest in here? The document emphasizes the shaping of perceptions through media, diplomacy, and other measures before any military steps are taken. This is called the pretext strategy, and it ensures minimal resistance to later escalations. By the way, every one of you are out there protesting no kings. Without that, you would have been out there protesting the bombing of Iran, wouldn't you? You got duped. And those who didn't do anything, have any of us asked what Iran did between then and now? Like, by the way, I haven't been following it, so I can't say myself. But we should probably do that on a podcast. We should look into that. Because they just got the crap blown out of them. Right. So read that. Remember, it's not just a policy memo. It is a crystal clear blueprint for elite-driven regime change via narrative engineering, faux diplomacy, media shaping, and international manipulation. And it is tangible proof of elite programming and a real-world case of engineered consent. In other words, you consent to it because you've been engineered to consent. Now, this is a very high credible source that you can go look up yourself and read every page. Please do. Please do. Don't rely on me. Certainly don't rely on your political party or the news media. All right. I wanted to bring that out because what I'm showing here is that you've got these tendencies to follow. To follow the leader, right? And what does that mean? It means you're being pre-programmed in many ways. You really are. Sorry to stay here. At least you should assume you are. All right. I want to pivot now. I want to talk about some solutions. I mean, here we are with only half an hour left, and I want to talk about some solutions. I mentioned a few of these earlier, but what you can do here, remember first, I've said it several times, check your news sources. I mentioned two of them, the SAN News, S-A-N, it's like a yellow place. It's an app. They'll show you on the app, by the way, and by the way, I'm not getting paid to promote this app. I'm just telling you what's out there for your own tools. But like SAN, it's called Straight Arrow News. And they have what they call unbiased updates. It's actually not true. What they're really showing is where the bias is. So if you click on an article, like there's one here that was 6 hours ago about a Hispanic journalist facing deportation after arrest while she was covering the No Kings protest, right? You can go into this and you can see the sources. One is The Guardian, one is the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Another one is Mario Guevara via Facebook. Right? They talk about, they show the full story, they give a summary, and they talk about the distribution of what people see and what they actually believe. They then will go into media misses. They'll show things that the left is not picking up. And they'll show things that the right is missing. Right? Like, what did Mike Lee say, Utah senator? He deleted some post about the Minnesota lawmaker shootings. Who isn't reporting that? The conservative media. They're not mentioning that. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that it'll get you, but all this is, this only does one thing. These are bias checking tools. This shows you the bias And inherent in that is the knowledge that these news organizations are indeed biased, because it'll show which ones are on the left, which ones are on the right. And I'm sorry, if you're only drinking out of one fountain, you are getting only one viewpoint. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. So that's number one. You have to use these bias checking tools if you really, really want to go far. Okay. What about recognizing the absurdity of multiple official truths? Really sit down and look at what you believe and map it back to something, please. I've talked about it before. If you believe in jumping around and having multiple partners, and never getting married, or you believe that marriage is, and by the way, I'm not judging here. I'm just saying, I'm giving this as an example. You believe that marriage is a temporary construct. And well, what is loneliness to you then? Is loneliness real? Because you're making a calculated choice of just jumping around. You don't believe in it anyway. You don't believe in real relationships. What if the opposite is true? What if you believed in real, true love, and that there's one person, a soulmate for you? You may save yourself for that person, right? Where do your beliefs come from? Who gave you that belief? Where'd you get it? Just map them out. I think one of the third things that we need to do for practice, you know, one of these practical strategies to resist media manipulation is to call out government narrative enforcement and censorship. One of the things, if you are on the right and you see the left getting censored, that their viewpoints are not being promoted, you should stand up for it. Because you're next, right? So you also want to push back on emotional propaganda. Again, we talked about this last night. Push back on the emotional propaganda. You don't need a news station. One of the things I did, I've got it here. I have a couple of links to a news broadcast from March 17th, 1949. And I've got one from NBC on in 1955, and I've got one from November 3rd, 1964, the evening news with Walter Cronkite. Go on and do some comparisons. Look at how things used to be. Take a look at it. See what you think. Right? See what you can see there. With that in mind, let's take a look now at maybe where our attention is. I think the last one is really look at your attention. Don't let your mind just kind of wander and flip through pages. This endless doom scrolling. Right? Go in with a purpose. Say, what's going on in my world today? What's affecting other people? How can I help? All right. One of the things you're going to have to do is build a mind of steel. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. You need to develop knowledge. You need to look at history. You need to understand what happened historically in all over the world. You need to be a student again. Right? And I would say to the Christians out there, to the Muslims, to the Jews, to others like Hindus, etc., you need to read your scriptures. You need to study what it is you really believe in. I certainly don't want you believing. I don't want you to go out and join my religion. I want you to follow your own. So start there. Okay. But why am I saying this? Because many of you don't even really, and we see this in corporate America too. People are just lazy. Everybody's just putting in the bare minimum, kind of chilling. So you got to develop your knowledge. You got to sharpen your skills, right? This is analysis, argument detection, emotional manipulation. So you need to be able to detach from that. You need to be able to say, oh, wait a minute, I'm becoming emotionally charged, emotionally manipulated, right? I need to do something about that. Get away from that, move away. The other thing is experience. You need to experience more. It's great to read about skiing. It's a whole nother thing to go skiing. So this will help you become resilient and discerning as you build a mind of steel. The other thing is, and I have to be careful how I say this, because people will say, okay, this means I don't have to listen to what the Republicans say, and this means I don't have to listen to those Democrats anymore. Just can ignore them because of what Matt said. So here's what I'm going to say. Like, you don't just rifle through your kitchen cabinets or under the sink and just start shoveling everything into your mouth, from flour to food coloring, right? Everything has a time and a place. And like, the cleaning supplies under your cabinet are not going to taste very good, and they're not going to be very good for you. Be discerning. Be, I would say, thoughtful about what you take into your mind. Your mind will believe whatever you tell it to believe. Have a firmness of mind. That's how you're going to build a mind of steel. So you have to then be able to say, no, I'm not going to. Now, by the way, let me again clarify this. I'm not talking about believing or not believing in the Democrats. I mean believing or not believing in the nonsense that's taught you from the news media, and especially when emotions are involved. When you are watching TV and the emotions start to rise, turn off the volume and just watch it and say, what is it that just triggered me here? Oh, they're talking about those people. Well, who do you know that's on the other side? Well, wait a minute. I know this guy. His name is Mark. He's a really good guy. I see him doing humanitarian stuff, and he's got such a great smile, and he's happy and hugs me around Thanksgiving time, contrary to what his, you know, political party wants him to do. Right? Inject some humanity into what it is that you're seeing. Allow a little compassion. And then you'll realize you'll start to become inoculated against this. You'll start to have courage. You'll start to have humility. You'll start to have curiosity and conviction. And you, my friend, start to defy the powers that be. This wooden nickel known as CNN, Fox News, both sides of the story. Nope, it's a false story. We don't need both sides of a false story. Right? We don't need to hear the big bad wolf, his side of the story, or Little Red Riding Hood's side of the story, because it's a fake story. We don't care. No matter how much they tell it to us with righteous indignation about how this poor wolf was treated so poorly by Little Red Riding Hood, the woodsman came in and shot him. Hey, he was just looking for a meal. He was oppressed. Right? You don't need any of that. Why? Because it's a fairy tale. Look into this stuff yourself. Okay. When we think about, you know, strengthening ourselves, moving beyond the lies, we need to have a certain bit of discernment. We need to recognize patterns. And we need to be able to then map these things out. I want to give the Christians out there a little something, And by the way, this applies to the Muslims and the Jews and anybody from Hinduism or what or any of those. I want to give you a little bit to kind of ground you back into your religion, right? I believe that there is an important aspect of, that we can follow our convictions, but not if we, deny them. So we've talked about these political lies. We've talked about media spin. We've talked about cultural confusion and propaganda. But there is this other layer. And for the Christians and Muslims and Jews and others, there is a spiritual element. Now, if you fall into a religion, you believe that truth comes from God, not from man. So start there. Truth isn't going to be found in the headlines of the schools or the political speeches. Go back to your God. Read your scriptures. And in many faiths, you're taught that this is something that happens spiritually through a Holy Spirit. So when the world shouts 100 different answers, there's only one that comes from God, and it's always right. So you have to remember that in your scriptures, like you don't even have to be a scholar, and you don't have to be a news junkie, but you do, I think, probably for the first time in your life, really need to sit down and look at where you're getting your truth from. Right? Now, Christians believe that you're going to receive truth through prayer. Right? You have to ask God. You then have to listen with your heart. You then have to kind of test it out. If you've got something you believe in, you should ask God about it, is what the scriptures are saying. And then if you do get an answer, you should act on it. Right? And I remind all of the faithful out there, regardless of your religion, that this one principle, and you may wonder, well, why is this political guy talking about religious stuff? Remember, it was the first debate that everybody had. And I think it's irrelevant from the debating perspective. What I'm saying is, if you believe it, see that you do it. See that you follow your religion. I remember talking to a friend of mine who's from a prominent faith, and I said, you believe in abortion? Your religion, and you're very active in your religion. Your religion doesn't believe that. Oh, well, And this hemming and hawing went on. Well, we've got to stand up for people's rights. Rights to do what? You believe it's murder. Do you want everybody to have the right to murder? Is that what you're saying? And by the way, I'm using his beliefs to get him to see that he's believing two separate things at the same time. Like me sitting on the couch eating Twinkies and potato chips, believing I'm going to somehow lose weight. Right? And for those of you who have seen me, you know that that's probably true, right? That's probably something I need to work on. But I'm using that because you actually have to sit down. We talked about science. For those of you that are into science, let's go back. What do you believe? Where do you get your beliefs from? Do you know? Do you remember? Think about it. We have science deniers on the one hand, and we have people who are promoting science who they themselves won't follow the science. They won't use the scientific method, and they're telling others to follow the science as a command. My friends, you are deceiving yourself. And I'm sorry to be so blunt, to be the one to tell you, but someone has to tell you that you are lying to yourself. Check yourself. All right? Check yourself. What else did we talk about at the beginning? We talked about health. Right? We talked about society, gender identity, and debates about those things. And finally, we talked about the 2020 election narratives. My friends, if you happen to be one of those people who, in listening tonight, found something useful that you can use to change your way of thinking, may I suggest to you a little system that I use? And this system is pretty simple. I call it the spectrum method. It's pretty simple. You basically have a knowledge, a skill, an attribute, and an experience. And for week one of the month, you'll gain some knowledge. Read an article. How is Dr. Pepper made? Maybe you study it. By the way, I just took a swig of Dr. Pepper while we were talking. Maybe you study it. Maybe you look at the cans and you talk about, you investigate something about, but it could be just something where you're reading an article for 5 minutes, on the train about it. But every night you study something, knowledge, you're gaining knowledge. A skill, the next week, I want to learn something new. I want to learn how to type. I want to learn how to do the piano. I want to learn, any of these skills. Maybe I want to learn a skill on the computer. Maybe I want someone to teach me how to change a tire. Right? Knowledge, a skill. Week three is an attribute. Right? An attribute. If you think about the virtues that we have out there of being charitable or whatever, maybe thrifty is an attribute you want to have, or maybe you want self-discipline, right? And finally, an experience, knowledge, skill, attribute, experience, KSAE. Maybe you've never been in a taxi cab before. Maybe you've never been on the bad side of town before, right? Get an experience. Let it change your mind. Why do we want to do this? Doing these four things cyclically trains your mind. It helps you. We talked about earlier knowledge, skills, and attributes. You may not have caught it as that, as we talked about the things you need to do to prepare your mind, the firmness of mind. So you're training your mind to be curious, to be receptive, to be open, to explore. And work outside of yourself. And finally, if there is a fifth week in the month, I call that the anti-week. I take a belief that I hold dear. Oh, I love the Democrat Party, or I love the Republican Party, or I am a devout communist, and I put that on the table and I chop it up 500 different ways. Because it's my anti-week. And I say, here's everything that's wrong with it. Here's everything that's wrong with being a Democrat today. Here's everything that's wrong with being a Republican. Here's everything that's wrong with this other thing I believe in. Right? Take it out, throw it on the table, chop it up, study it the whole week. Take the opposing viewpoint and then see how your ideas stand. When you do that, you'll learn why you believe what you believe in. You'll learn that big time. So, my friends, you know, we've only got a few minutes left. And I want to talk to you a little bit about putting all these things into action. You've heard a lot from me tonight. I have tried on purpose to pull the rug out from under you of your beliefs. And I apologize in advance. Well, I guess it isn't in advance if I already did it. But I apologize if that made you feel uncomfortable. You should ask yourself, can I handle the truth? If somebody tells you the truth, could you really handle it? If they told you you were wrong about something, can you accept it? And we've all been married to that person who never says, I'm sorry, because they're never wrong. Those marriages usually don't last long, by the way. Can you handle the truth? Is that why it's not being told to you? Do I look fat in these jeans? Yep. Oh, crap. Don't say that. Right? So what are you doing to prepare your mind to handle the truth? Again, I'm going to ask you that question. What are you doing to prepare your mind to handle the truth? Did you catch that? I'm saying there's an objective truth. There is. And I'm saying that we can discover it, find it, follow it, and that it'll make us happy. Then we don't have to be bounced around in the stratosphere by the next thing that pops up in the world. Does that make sense? So, again, follow this simple thing with the spectrum method. Knowledge, skill, attribute, experience. On week 5, trash something you believe in. I believe that I should be driving a Ford. Fords are the best ever. My family's always voted Republican. Why? Then not know how to push the lever for a candidate that met their requirements? It may surprise you, ladies and gentlemen, that every election cycle, I choose a candidate from both sides. And then I try to see, well, I'd like it if that candidate got in on the Democrat side. I'd really like it if that candidate got in on the other side. It sometimes becomes difficult when the king men choose candidates and you don't have your choice. Right? I think so. So join me next time, ladies and gentlemen, when we talk about a few other, I think, weighty topics. And prepare your mind to receive those, if you don't mind. We're going to have a good time doing that. And one of the things that I want you to know is that while we do this, we're going to have fun. And you'll be able to enjoy all of these things. So, anyway, join me next time. We got 5 more episodes left to do. Remember, it's nice to have knowledge, but better to have understanding. And on a clear day, you can see for miles, but on a clear mind, you can see forever. This is Matthew Von Trapp.